People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Wildcard.
This is Writing Excuses.
Interview with Gabriela Pereira of DIY MFA.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Howard.
I'm Erin, and we are joined today, as the title says, by Gabriela Pereira. It's so lovely to have you here. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how awesome you are.
I am so thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Gabriela Pereira, founder and instigator of DIY MFA, which is the do-it-yourself alternative to a Master of Fine Arts in Writing. And basically what we do is we help writers get the knowledge without the college.
I love that. I also love the word instigator. I'm kind of curious where you came up with that before we get into the actual bulk of it. How did you decide to make yourself the instigator, or were you simply born this way?
I've always been a little bit of a rebel, so there's definitely that. But the term instigator came from the fact that when I started the company DIY MFA, it felt really presumptuous to call myself the founder. Like, founder felt so imposing and big. And it was just me and my cat, you know, it was just us in a home office. And so it felt like I needed some other quirky title. And I was thinking about all of those like startups that they have, like director of happiness and, you know, blah, blah, blah of whatever. And it just, nothing really landed until the word instigator came to mind. And then I was like, that's it. That's my title.
And there's this whole, at risk of putting words in your mouth, there's this whole anti-institutional aspect to this that suggests you're not founding, you're not pouring concrete, you're organizing a heist.
Yes, I love that. Exactly.
It's a heist of knowledge.
I was about to say the heist of writing, the heist of writing craft and knowledge. So, okay, let's just like ride this analogy into the sunset. So I'm curious, like, if people are trying to do their own writing heist away knowledge from, you know, the MFAs of the world or from places like your blog, your podcast, or ours, like, how do you suggest people go about it? Like, how do you put together a writing program for yourself?
So maybe the best way to answer this is by explaining how I came up with the DIY MFA curriculum. So DIY MFA has three pillars: write with focus, read with purpose, build your community. And when I first came up with the idea of DIY MFA, this was actually on the heels of getting my traditional MFA, I studied a lot of different programs. I went online and looked at like the application requirements and the different curricula you know, descriptions and whatnot of different writing programs out there, MFA programs and other programs as well. And three themes kept coming up again and again and again. One is that you have to write a lot. Otherwise, what's the point of being in a writing program? The second one is you have to read a lot because that's how you learn how to write better. And the third one was you have to have a community. There has to be some exchange of knowledge. And so that's where the sort of big three of DIY MFA came from, was you have to have these three components, writing, reading, and community. And you can have them in different variations. You can have different amounts of them, but you need to have all three. You can't just have two or one of them, because then you're not going to have a well-rounded education.
In the mid to late 90s, Anders Ericsson introduced us all to the concept of focused practice.
Yes.
Which was this idea that we all need to practice at whatever we're doing in order to gain mastery in the domain. But if you don't focus your practice on the things that you're bad at, all you are practicing is the same set of shortcuts for getting the job done. And I've had, I didn't call it write with focus, but I've had that principle in my head for close to 20 years now, because being a web cartoonist, there was no educational program for that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think a lot of writers, when they first start out, they're kind of just trying all sorts of different things, right? They don't really have a focus. They're just writing. And that's perfectly fine when you're first starting, because that's how you figure out what you like and what your tastes are. But at some point, you need to double down. And what you said is exactly right. You need to be practicing the skills that you're not as strong at. Because if you're practicing the skills that you're already good at, you're going to get a lot better at those, but you're not going to build new skills. You're not going to build a well-rounded craft.
One of the questions that I get asked a lot, and I'm never really happy with the answers that I'm giving back, is, how do you know what you don't know? Like, when you're trying to practice your craft, when you're trying to improve, how do you identify the parts where you're not good at it yet? And even the parts where, like, you don't know that there's a thing that you could improve?
That's a really great question, because...
Right? Yeah, it gives me trouble too.
it's really hard, because it's like in design. I have a background in design, and in design, it's like looking at negative space. You're mm-hmm. looking at the things that aren't there, as opposed to looking at the things that are there, which are much easier to spot. It's a lot harder to see the things that aren't there. I mean, I know that when I work with students and with writers, it really is a sort of... an instinctive thing. Like I read their work, and then from reading their work, I'm able to identify, the way I explain it to my, to writers I work with is I'm looking for patterns. I'm mm-hmm. looking for repeated things that are maybe glitching them up a little bit and giving them a harder time. And then those are the things that we try to unpack and unravel when we practice.
I think that's one reason why having all three pillars makes a lot of sense, because the reason reading is important, other than, you know, it's fun and we love it, is to see patterns that you're not using that somebody else is, in the same way that if you were robbing a bank, you might say, I went in fine and did X, but this other group also blew up the vault. I would have never thought to do that. Maybe explosives is something I need to include in my next heist. You know, I never would have included it before, but now it's there. And I think you can do that same thing with like somebody's explosive writing, like the way that they put action on the page is something you never would have thought of before, or the way that they use language. And so that's why I would assume like the reading part is just as important as the writing part is.
Absolutely. And the key really is understanding how to read with a writer's perspective, because I think a lot of times we're reading for pleasure, and reading for pleasure is great. I do it all the time, but it's not the way that you really delve into the texts. You have to really read with an eye toward how is the writer doing this? And then how can I borrow that or steal that and, you know, make it my own and turn it into something. But we have to be thinking about that how. We can't just be thinking about like what's going on in the story, who are the characters, things like that. That's all well and good if you're reading for pleasure, but it's not going to take you anywhere in terms of improving your craft.
What are some of the things that you, when you're teaching someone to, I call it interrogating the text, but when you're thinking about it from specifically a writer standpoint, what are some of the things you're asking someone to read for?
So the thing to understand is we have to understand how reading works, mm-hmm. right? So there's basically three levels of reading. And I think of it as like the reader is like a swimmer in the ocean and the ocean is the book. So when you're swimming in the ocean, most of the time you're going to be on the surface because that's where the air is, right? So you're swimming along the top layer, and that's what I call the what layer. It's the layer where you're asking, like, what are the characters doing? What's going on? It's all the logistical stuff that's happening in the story. And that's what we're reading for when we read for pleasure. Then there's like a layer beneath that, sort of a middle layer. That's like the equivalent of, let's say you're swimming and you notice there's a reef and it's like 8 feet below you and there's some really cool fish swimming around and you want to get a closer look. So you take a deep breath and you go a little bit deeper and you swim around and you check out the fish and then you come back up to the surface, right? And that's the why layer. That's the layer that we learn to read at when we're in an English class or in a literature class. That's the layer where we're doing interpretation and we're trying to figure out, like, why did the author write this text? Why does it have meaning? Why is it important? All of those things. But then there's the third layer, and that's the layer at the very bottom of the ocean, at the ocean floor. And that's when you spot like that little sparkly object, that little piece of treasure, and you decide, okay, I'm going to take a huge gulp and I'm going to swim all the way to the bottom and I'm going to grab that thing and bring it back with me to the surface. That's the how layer. That's the application layer. That's the layer where you're really thinking about, like, how can I do this too? How can I make this work? And how did the author make it work on the page? And the thing that's important to remember is that you cannot live at the how layer or even at the why layer all the time. Because if you do, you're going to run out of air. So a lot of people, they think that you have to be reading at this super deep level all the time. They're going to drive themselves bonkers if they try to do that. So what you have to recognize is that most of the time, it's okay to be at the surface level and to be just kind of floating along. And then occasionally you go down, you visit the fish, and occasionally you go all the way down and you get that sparkly thing from the bottom of the ocean. But that's only for like specific passages, for specific sections of what you're reading. You're not going to try to do that for an entire, you know, 300, 400 page book, because you're going to lose your mind.
I love that metaphor, and at risk of overextending it, because that's my whole shtick. When the surface is smooth versus when the surface is choppy, well, what changed? Well, those are the layers above where you're reading. Flying is really hard, but in order to understand what's happening on the surface of the ocean, we have to understand what the atmosphere is doing. We have to understand sunlight. We have to understand a bazillion things. And no, you can't swim up. You know, exploring these things is really difficult, but they all come together to build that experience of the surface that you are swimming across.
Absolutely. And that also ties into what a lot of recent research has been finding, is that reading really has this profound immersive experience that they almost call it like a life simulator, that like mm-hmm. when you're reading, you're experiencing an emotion in the same way or in a similar way to how you would have that emotion in real life. So like if the character's experiencing grief, you're going to feel that grief just as if you were having grief in your life. And so that sort of immersiveness also, I think, is part of like what you're saying, that like all of these conditions of what's happening on the surface are part of what like kind of pull us into the ocean and kind of immerse us in the experience.
Wow. I feel like I understand reading in a way that I didn't like 5 minutes ago, and want to hear more about this, but also from like a writing perspective, how do we translate all that fabulous reading knowledge, everything's we've found beneath the surface, into writing? We're going to have to do that after we take a break for our thing of the week.
Hey, friends. The 2025 retreat registration is open. We have two amazing writing retreats coming up, and we cordially invite you to enroll in them. For those of you who sign up before January 12th, 2025, how is that even a real date? We're off.
Friend. Friend.
As you can probably hear my cat say, we've got a special treat for our friends. We're offering a little something special to sweeten the pot. You'll be able to join several of my fellow Writing Excuses hosts and me on a Zoom early bird meet and greet call to chit-chat, meet fellow writers, ask questions, and get even more excited about Writing Excuses retreats. To qualify to join the early bird meet and greet, all you need to do is register to join a Writing Excuses retreat, either our Regenerate retreat in June or our annual cruise in September 2025. Just register by January 12th. Learn more at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
So the thing I wanted to share is the DIY MFA Starter Kit, which is a free starter kit that you can download. You just go to diymfa.com/join, J-O-I-N, and you can enter your email address and then you can download your starter kit. And basically what it is it's a packet of like worksheets that walk you through those three components, the writing, the reading, and the community. And they're sort of like the intro level material for each of those three areas. So we talk about in the writing, how to be more productive and how to track your writing habits. In the reading, we talk about how to write your own reading list instead of having a professor give you the reading list the way it would at school. You figure out how to have your own reading list and develop your own. And then in the community piece, we talk about how to build that sort of well-rounded community of people around you, that circle of trust. So that's my thing of the week.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so we have just been swimming in the ocean, reading, grabbing things, sparkly things, seeing fish. How do we then take that pillar, reading, and translate it into writing?
That's a really good question, because so much of it is like instinctive for me. Like sometimes it's hard to break down like how I do things that are just sort of happening. But I think the thing with writing is that it's all about focused practice. So I think writing prompts and exercises don't get enough love. I think that, it's really important to give yourself room to practice. And when I say practice, I mean practicing in a way that there isn't a performance involved. There isn't that expectation of you're going to be showing this work to anybody or that anyone else is going to see the performance. Because sometimes, you know, you do writing prompts in a writing class and then everybody reads their work out loud. There's that expectation, like you're sort of worried, like, oh, are they going to like what I wrote? And that whole thing. And it can be kind of nerve-wracking. But practicing in sort of this private space where you can make mistakes and you can try really wacky things and you can try something and it could totally fail. And then you try something else and maybe it works the second time or the third time. But I think doing that incremental practice is really important. And I would say if a writer is going to start practicing any component, the thing to really start with is the character, because the characters are the heart and soul of the story. So I would practice exercises that really put the character at the center of the exercise.
Well, I think the other thing about the character, because, you know, when you get to hard mode, there's definitely stories that don't have characters. But the thing about character is that it is the, I believe in focus practice as well, and putting the exercises on easy level and picking a character who is aligned with you and your experiences allows you to mine those and figure out how those tools work before you start reaching for characters that have a different lived experience, like because they're on Mars or something that you could never experience. And then you can start getting progressing in the same way that if you are picking up the violin, you don't just start playing Rachmaninoff, you start with etudes, or actually you just start with trying to make a decent note on an open string. And I think that that's another very practical reason to start with character, because it is one of the most accessible parts of the writing toolbox.
One of the rules that I come back to over and over and over again is for your practice to truly be focused, you need to not be getting paid for it. Because the moment you are doing a thing for pay, there are other requirements beyond learn from this. And one of the requirements is don't fail at it. It has to be good enough to work, which leads us in many cases to take some of the same shortcuts or long cuts, you know, the end runs around the difficult things that we just need to do over and over and fail at. When I created Schlock Mercenary, I didn't really know how to draw. Spoiler warning, you know, and then I started releasing it immediately on the internet every day. There was not a whole lot of time to practice. And if I had it to do over again, I would not do it over again because it's my life and I want to have lived it the way I lived it. But the advice I would give is don't do it that way. Because there were mistakes that I continued to make for a decade or more. I remember talking to a friend of mine, Lar D'Souza, I saying, my hand hurts. I can only draw for so long. And he said, well, draw for me. And so I started drawing and he immediately said, stop, you're gripping too tightly and you're pushing too hard. Do you do that all the time? Yes. Okay. And he gave me a new pen and it was a brush pen and said, try this out. I said, oh, I've tried those before. I can't use those. Yes, when the student is ready, the master shall appear. Try this. Draw some things with this. Don't draw it for anyone else. Just make lines and learn to use it. And that 15 minutes I spent with Lar literally changed my art style and saved my hand. It's huge.
This actually, I love that. And actually makes me, though, think of a question, which is, like, luckily you had someone who was sort of telling you this is the tool that you need. If you're trying to do this focused writing and you're trying to find, you know, exercises, obviously writing excuses will give you many and DIY MFA will give you even more. But like, I'm wondering, like, people can feel overwhelmed by the number of exercises and the number of practices. So like, how do you actually like advise people to figure out which thing to do next so that you're not just sitting there with like 20 exercises in front of you and no idea where to start?
So I think of it as like there's sort of a hierarchy. I think character is the entry point, because the character, like Mary Robinette mentioned earlier, is sort of the accessible, you know, it's sort of the universal component that is the most accessible to us as readers and as writers. And then from there, I would focus on things that have to do with the narration. So things like once you figured out what, you know, how to make characters and mold them and how to shape them and how to work out their relationships with each other and things like that, then I would focus on things like the voice and the point of view. And there, you know, are many different exercises that you can do that sort of help you home in on specific elements of the voice and point of view. And then from there, I would focus on plot and story structure. And so like plot and story structure type of exercises. So that's kind of like the hierarchy that I would take. I would sort of work my way through exercises in that order, but then again, use them as needed. Like if you already feel pretty confident with character, then you don't necessarily need to work on that. You can work on the next level up and sort of think of it that way.
So I still do writing exercises. And you know, my career is going pretty well. But I will still do isolated writing exercises that are not connected with me trying to write a book or a short story. And I do it because it helps me identify where I'm struggling. One of the things I've been thinking about, you know, how to figure out where to focus your practice. And sometimes one of the things is like when I feel myself slowing down a lot, that's a sign that my brain is having to work really hard at something. And I don't necessarily stop, but I do make a note that, oh, okay. And sometimes I slow down enough that I'm like, oh, okay, I am stopping. What am I struggling with here? And when I'm just practicing, sometimes I will go and I'll do an exercise. It's like, oh, well, the problem that you're having right now is you have no idea what your character's motivation is. So let's pull out a motivation worksheet and let's go through that and see what we can come up with. The other thing that I have found when I am trying to figure out, like in my own writing journey, is that if I can explain it to someone else, I probably actually have a pretty good handle on it. And it may just be that I just need to practice it more, but I understand it, even if I'm still in the process of internalizing it. So something that occurs to me, going back to that earlier question I have asked about how do you know what you don't know, and how do you focus your writing practice? Like if you take a class or you know go through something with a DIY MFA or you listen to the podcast, find a writing friend and say I want to teach you the thing that I just learned. And if you get into it and you're like, boy, I know all of these words and I don't actually know what any of them mean, this is an area that you probably need more work.
And that's the lesson that I took away from my experience with Lar, was that I'd been doing this for 15 years and community was the piece that I had been missing. I needed to have somebody who was much better at doing what I was doing watch me do it 30 seconds in order to correct something.
You just reminded me, this is an analogy that I love, and I want to share it to reassure people. So I was at a Sesame Street workshop, and Marty Robinson, Mr. Snuffleupagus, was showing us this monitor technique, and it was an exercise, and all we had to do was slide the puppet into the frame and have it focus straight at the camera, and we had to hit center frame, which sounds easy. It is not. Because the puppet does not exist until it comes into the frame when you're doing video puppetry, which means that all of the tiny nuances are different every single time you come in. And he was watching us get frustrated and he said, hang on, let me show you. And he comes in and he's like, spot on, a little off. And he was doing it over and over again. He said, it's an exercise that he still does. And what he said was, I am making all of the mistakes you make, but I am just correcting them sooner. And that's the thing that I realized with my writing is that I'm still making the same kind of mistakes. It's like, oh, here is the urge to add this character. I'm like, yeah, and that character is going to cause a story bloat of epic proportions. But I can see it as I put the character down, but the impulse to put that character is still there. So, you know, when you are learning these things, don't beat yourself up because you're not good at it immediately. It takes iterations to get there.
Yeah, I think it's also, I love that. And I love seeing how people teach subjects just generally. I think it's a great way to learn, like, just how much there is in any subject that might take you years to get to. I recently watched old videos of Stephen Sondheim listening to people singing his songs and then correcting them, which singing a Sondheim song in front of Sondheim, like how they even got through it, I do not know. But like, he would listen and they'd be like, oh, it's this thing. And in seeing the way that he approached it, even though it's music and not writing, I think it's nice to think about like how we, it's like if you're diving through that ocean and you don't understand why the fish is that color or why that sparkly thing on the bottom is as sparkly as it is, it can be really frustrating. And seeing it happen to someone in a completely different subject can sometimes make you feel like this is a common human experience. I am not a failure at writing or reading. It's just that things take time. And sometimes you just need to learn a little bit from other people who have been in the ocean longer or are used to that fish or put that sparkly thing down there in order to understand what they're doing. And so when I feel frustrated with not knowing what to do next, sometimes I look at just a completely different field and go, everyone's having this problem. Everyone has these challenges. Now I feel like maybe I can attempt to tackle them in the area that I'm in, which is writing. Perhaps on that note would be a good time to have our exercise, which will get you started in the subject that we're dealing with, which is writing. I believe you have our homework for the week, Gabrielle.
Yes. So this exercise is sort of an exercise in observation, in observing your own habits. So at DIY MFA, we talk about our writing time, like our creative time, as being like a pie. And the pie has three slices in it. One slice is for writing, one slice is for reading, and one slice is for community. Now, these slices can vary in terms of their size. You might have half of your pie be writing and like a tiny little sliver is community and then the rest is reading. Or it might be perfectly in thirds, so however you want to do it. But what I would recommend is like, look at your patterns, like look at your habits. Take a week or 2 weeks. And at the end of every day, just draw a little circle and map out like how much of that circle did you spend doing writing? How much did you spend doing reading? How much did you spend in community with other writers? And do that over the course of 1 or 2 weeks, just like a quick little doodle at the end of each day. And you'll start to see patterns emerge. You'll start to notice that certain pieces of your pie maybe are non-existent or very, very small. You may notice that certain pieces of your pie are overshadowing other ones. And again, I want to stress that there's no like right or wrong balance to the pie. It's about finding the balance that's right for you. Like for example, for me, my best balance is about half of the pie being for writing and then the other half divided evenly between community and reading. That's my personal typical balance. Now, when I go to a writing conference or a writing retreat, community might be 90% of the pie. And then that last little 10% is the writing and the reading. And so, you know, the pie also varies depending on what else is happening in your life. But the best way to gauge how your behaviors already exist, like you kind of need to get a sense for yourself in your natural ecosystem. Like, how do you behave in your natural ecosystem? And that's what this exercise does. You just do a little doodle at the end of every day for about 1 or 2 weeks, and then just observe what some of those patterns are and what's coming up for you.
That is a great exercise that I need to do myself, I think. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Have you ever wanted to ask one of the Writing Excuses hosts for very specific, very you-focused help? There's an offering on the Writing Excuses Patreon that will let you do exactly that. The private instruction tier includes everything from the lower tiers, plus a quarterly one-on-one Zoom meeting with a host of your choice. You might choose, for example, to work with me on your humorous prose, engage Dong Wan's expertise on your worldbuilding, or study with Aaron to level up your game writing. Visit patreon.com/writingexcuses for more details.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends.
Your hosts for this episode of Writing Excuses were Mary Robinette Kowal, Howard Taylor, and Aaron Roberts, with special guest Gabriela Pereira.
This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.